From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United States is the most heavily armed nation in the entire world, with more guns than people. Each year, more than 100,000 Americans are shot, many of them fatally. The U.S. isn't just proliferating guns domestically, but internationally. A program under President Obama that boosted arms sales worldwide has gained new steam under President Donald Trump. In fact, Trump is formally requiring American diplomats serving around the world to push weapons sales. My guest is William Hartung. He's the director of the Arms and Security Project at the Center for International Policy and a senior advisor to the Center's Security Assistance Monitor. He's also the author of Profits of War, Lockheed Martin, and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. He writes regularly for Tom Dispatch, and his latest piece there is entitled Donald Trump, Gun Runner for Hire, the NRA and the Gun Industry in the Global Stratosphere. Welcome to the program, William.
Thanks for having me.
So we don't often hear the analysis of linking domestic weapons proliferation, gun sales, with international small arms and weapons sales in general. But what is the link? How it's no coincidence, right, that the U.S. has unprecedented number of weapons domestically and is also pushing weapon sales abroad.
Not at all. Well, one connection, of course, is money. The gun manufacturers that arm people here in this country are desperate for foreign markets, and the Trump administration is going to make it easier for them to sell all over the world. Likewise, the NRA, partly for reasons of ideology, wants the globe to be armed, not just the United States. And so they've opposed a lot of measures that would have limited U.S. gun exports, including opposing the U.N. Arms Trade Treaty. And they've been very supportive of Trump's efforts. They helped get him elected, and they're very behind his push for firearms exports.
Now, the deal that Trump made with Saudi Arabia, weapons deal, was something that he was very, very proud of. He's not the only president, of course, to do this. Obama also famously sold Saudi Arabia lots of weapons. And that has been the basis of the Saudi-U.S. relationship, right? Weapons sales between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. And just recently, we saw the impact of that when a bomb by Saudi Arabia that hit a busy market in northern Yemen resulted in the massacre of a lot of people, especially children. Part of a bomb fragment was found where 40 schoolboys who were traveling by school bus had been killed. Is that bomb fragment symbolic of the destruction that the U.S. weapon sales to Saudi Arabia is wreaking?
Yes, it's just one of many examples. There's been fragments of U.S. cluster bombs found near civilian sites, near bombings of funerals, fragments of U.S. bombs, and so forth, documented by Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. And it stands to reason the United States selling tens of billions of dollars to the Saudis, including bombs, including missiles, including the aircraft that dropped the bombs, that there's a major responsibility on the part of the United States for thousands of civilians being killed, and also for blockade that's put millions of people at risk of famine and disease and other devastating impacts. So that's kind of in a nutshell, or one terrible example, the bombing of the school children, what's been happening for the last 3.5 years with support of the United States and also United Kingdom.
How does Trump's approach to weapon sales in foreign countries compare to Obama's?
Well, Trump, of course, will brag about sales whether or not he's made them. In fact, some of the deals he brags about routinely were made under Obama. But he seems to be getting traction with pushing diplomats to sell weapons, with talking about it every turn when he's got a press conference with a foreign leader. So for the first part of this year, in the first 6 months, so the Pentagon's biggest arms sales program, they made $46 billion in deals, which was more than all of last year. So the Trump rhetoric seems to be now being backed up with the reality of higher sales.
How is it even acceptable for diplomats to be pushing weapon sales? I mean, isn't Trump essentially turning ambassadors into salespeople for Lockheed Martin by doing that?
Yes, and it's an outrage. Diplomats have plenty to do where they're allowed to do it, in terms of understanding complexities in the regions where they serve, trying to head off conflict. Under Obama, of course, you had the Iran nuclear deal, which took a lot of diplomatic effort. And if you're going to take your diplomats and basically put them in charge of weapons sales and salesmanship, you're going to undermine diplomacy that much more. And of course, Trump has not been a great advocate of diplomacy, and he's, of course, gutted the State Department.
Is that one big difference between Obama and Trump? Did Obama ever push diplomats to push weapon sales around the world?
There wasn't this kind of explicit top-down kind of shouting from the rooftops, this is your job kind of approach. But you did hear administration officials, for example, in congressional testimony say things like, we're top to bottom looking to help our manufacturers throughout the government. So it's not unprecedented, but perhaps it's unprecedented just in the aggressiveness with which it's being pursued.
Now, you point out in your piece in Tom Dispatch that there exists a whole federal agency that I think most Americans aren't aware of to actually help arms manufacturers sell weapons abroad, the Defense Security Cooperation Agency. Tell us a little bit about this agency and what its mandate is.
Well, the first interesting thing, of course, is the name, which sounds so benign, when in fact it's about pushing weapons around the world. But basically, for most of the big deals, this agency negotiates with the foreign country about the nature of the weapons and the costs and so forth. It collects the money, which it then reissues to U.S. companies as defense contracts. It provides spare parts and logistics. It organizes training packages. So it's kind of an all-service arms broker, and it's a significant part of the Pentagon. And it, the heads of this agency often brag about how much they're pushing arms and what levels U.S. sales are reaching, which is sort of backwards because the U.S. government, of course, should be regulating these things, not cheering them on.
Which are the corporations that benefit the most? And actually, who really benefits in general? Because the massive justification, the major justification that Trump and other politicians push constantly is jobs, that we are helping our manufacturers sell weapons because it creates US jobs. Does that stand up?
No, it doesn't. It's great for Boeing and Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics and Raytheon, which make the aircraft and the bombs and the tanks and the missiles that are sold to Saudi Arabia. But in many cases, they are putting production overseas in the Gulf states and elsewhere. For example, Lockheed Martin just agreed to assemble some helicopters in Saudi Arabia that the Saudis are buying from them. But in general, when you spend money on the military and on weapons, it creates many fewer jobs than any other export. 1.5 times as many jobs for environmental technology, a similar gap if you invest in infrastructure at home. So it's a small number of jobs to begin with, relatively speaking, and then many of those jobs are being placed overseas. So it's not really an economic development strategy. And of course, even if it were, it's not justified given, the horrors that are being created in places like Yemen.
In the Saudi weapons deal, I understand that that deal would actually create a lot of jobs in Saudi Arabia, right?
Exactly. And in fact, Saudi Arabia's new plan, the Crown Prince has this plan 2030 to transform their economy. And one of the goals is that 50% of anything that they purchase in terms of weapons be produced in Saudi Arabia. So companies are setting up, their own offices there, and they're helping transfer technology both to them and to the UAE. In the UAE, there's a machine tool factory that helps make machine tools for aerospace purposes that Lockheed Martin is helping them develop. So they'll actually be a competitor with US companies. So basically, the companies will do whatever they can to make the sale. They don't really care about US jobs except when it comes to publicity to promote exports.
William Hartung, there's a difference between the big weapons and the little weapons. Let's talk a little bit about that. You have the big ticket items, if you will, such as the stealth bombers, these massive kinds of fighter jets and big bombs. And then you have small weapons. You've got rifles and AK-47s. How do the big sales compare to the sales of small arms? And are small arms in the long term more dangerous?
Well, the bulk of the money goes for the big ticket items, tens of billions of dollars, versus probably less than 10 billion a year for small arms and light weapons. But the small arms and light weapons are used in civil wars, and in the bulk of the world's, two dozen or so conflicts, the weapon of choice is some sort of small arm, an AK-47, a mortar, so forth. So, some advocates of reducing the small arms trade call them slow motion weapons of mass destruction, because they're responsible for tens of thousands of deaths, both in, international wars and also domestically in the United States every year. So, they get less attention, there's less money involved, but it's probably the deadliest part of the trade, with the exception of cases like Yemen, where it is the larger weapons being used.
Right. So the big ticket items are less likely to, of course, be hijacked by non-government actors. The small weapons are harder to trace, can proliferate into the hands of, say, the Taliban or ISIS or any other non-government actor. That's not to, of course, let state actors off the hook when it comes to perpetrating violence. But the small arms being proliferated in this manner can actually be passed around across borders more easily, right?
Exactly. And large amounts of US weaponry has fallen into the hands of ISIS, been captured or sold to the Taliban in Afghanistan. So it's already happening, and the Trump policy would make it worse, because they're moving a lot of the firearms that are regulated by the State Department, which does more serious vetting, to the Commerce Department, which is about promoting exports. So they're not going to be able to track these things as clearly. It'll be even easier for criminal gangs and terrorists and other unsavory actors to get their hands on US weapons. So it's a major step backward. And the worst thing of all, perhaps, is they're going to stop notifying Congress of major deals. So in the past, Congress has stepped in with respect to sales to Turkey or the Philippines, other human rights abusers. It'd be much harder for them to do that now if they're not even notified when these deals are happening.
Is Congress actually opposing this? I mean, Congress could, I presume, force the administration, the federal government, to restore that notification.
There's some members who are looking at doing that. It hasn't come into force yet. The regulations have been passed through, and comments have been developed, and it'll be implemented in full later this year. So there are members who are speaking out, like Senator Cardin of Maryland, number of important members of the House. So there will be a push, at least, to restore the notification, to try to make sure that some of the more deadly things like sniper rifles and AR-15s that have been used in school shootings here do not go to the Commerce Department. The problem, of course, is to make big changes, you need a veto-proof majority, and that doesn't exist for members who support controlling the export of guns. So they'll have to figure out the best way to do this. It's possible a notification, they'll get some Republicans to say, oh, yes, we should at least know what's going on. But it's going to be a tough fight. But there's an interesting coalition of domestic gun control groups and arms control groups, human rights groups, working together in ways that they haven't done before, particularly on this issue of 3D printing of guns, which may come into play as part of the Trump quote unquote reforms.
Let's talk about that. Defense Distributed is the name of the company in Texas that wanted to sell, wants to still sell the plans, the online electronic plans, digital plans, easily downloadable, but and basically be able to create untraceable guns by anybody with a 3D printer at home. So these plastic guns, and the company was sued. To stop it, the Trump administration settled and basically sided with this corporation, but I understand that it's still on hold, although the plans did get out online. Why is this you know, this basically is homemade guns. Why is this something that the Trump administration is so interested in?
I think basically anything that makes it easier to get a gun, Donald Trump is in favor of. You know, it's partly because of his NRA support. I think it's partly his ideology. And this, of course, is one of the more disastrous potential developments, because then literally you could get these things through various kinds of detectors, much easier to proliferate them, whether or not you had stronger gun control laws. So it's a potential disaster in the making. There's been a court case that's blocked it for the moment, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But it was initially blocked partly through arms export regulations, because of course, once you put these things on the web, they're available globally to anyone who wants to download them. So that's a huge fight, and it's going to go on for the rest of this year. And, you know, members have spoken out, more powerful members than in the past, and people like Chuck Schumer and so forth. And we'll see whether they can get traction to stop this.
Now, the NRA is interested in gun proliferation at any cost here at home. What is their position on foreign weapon sales? Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, et cetera, are the corporations that benefit from foreign weapon sales. They're the ones who manufacture these. Why does the NRA care? And is the NRA involved in pushing for weapon sales abroad?
Well, they've certainly pushed hard for this deregulation of firearms exports, and that's their biggest interest. But they also, for example, blocked the arms trade treaty, which would have limited the sales of big ticket systems like fighter planes, as well as, you know, smaller kinds of weaponry. So, you know, their general kind of anti-regulation stance, and the fact that anything involving the United Nations they view as anathema, means that they've essentially, they're in league with or in parallel with the bigger manufacturers in terms of making it easy as possible to push any kind of weapons exports from the United States.
So essentially it's an ideological position you think that they might be taking, just because any attack in any way, in any realm, on any kind of guns is seen as unacceptable and seen as somehow chipping away at at the right of a serial killer to have an AK-47 or a mass shooter?
Yes, I think part of it is their slippery slope argument. Any tiny gain for gun control eventually will lead to people having their guns taken away. And of course, a lot of that is exaggeration on their part to keep their members riled up. I don't think they necessarily believe it, but that's their public position, and that's sort of how they keep their people in line and do their fundraising and run a fear campaign to try to block any conceivable way of limiting weapon sales here or abroad.
Do you think Americans are making enough connections between the weapon sales, the gun proliferation here in the U.S., and what's happening outside the U.S.? I mean, sadly, when we see destruction and death in Syria and Yemen and Afghanistan and Iraq as a result of U.S. weapons, whether they're bombs or small weapons, we're not linking that to the weaponry here at home. But in the end, these are all instruments of death and destruction.
Exactly. I think the case of Yemen has gotten a little more attention because it's such a disaster, a humanitarian disaster, but a lot of these other examples do not get talked about. I think, you know, closer to the U.S., you know, a lot of the crime guns in Mexico and Central America come from the United States. And so a lot of the violence that has driven people to come here, including unaccompanied minors and so forth, is the result of U.S. exporting violence south of the border. So Trump, on the one hand, lies about the fact that there's criminals coming here. On the other hand, he doesn't talk about the fact that it's a lot of our gun exports are driving people from their own countries to have to come to the United States. So I think, you know, that connection in particular needs more focus. People need to understand what's driving a lot of this immigration.
Meanwhile, of course, weapons manufacturers are doing quite well. I mean, there comes a time when you saturate the world with weapons. Our country is saturated with guns. As I said, more guns than actual people. And other countries are probably or possibly not very happy about the U.S.'s weapons dealing, arms dealing, gun running, as you've put it, around the world. Are there any international efforts to curb U.S. weapons sales, because it is a problem of violence in countries when they can't control U.S. Made small weapons pouring in across their border?
Well, there's organizations, NGOs, non-governmental organizations like International Action Network on Small Arms and others that over the years have tried to curb the sales and focus on the impact of exported weapons. There's movements in the UK to block sales to Saudi Arabia. The European Parliament called for a boycott of sales to the Saudis. So there's some international efforts, but the problem is a lot of the places where the guns are being sent are ruled by dictators. And so they are not consulting their people about whether this is a good idea. So a lot of it will be action within individual countries, and then hopefully that activism will link up globally.
William, where's a good place for people to read your writings?
Well, the Center for International Policy is my, where I work. And if you Google there, there's a page of all my publications. And quite a bit of my longer material is at Tom Dispatch.
That's tomdispatch.com. And William, we'll link to your article from our website. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
My guest has been William Hartung, author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin, and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. He writes regularly for Tom Dispatch's latest article is called Donald Trump Gunrunner for Hire, the NRA and the Gun Industry in the Global Stratosphere. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RU with Sonali.